What's up, everybody? This is Calvin, your host of the Crypto Drip Podcast. I'm joined again today with Mr. Goose, my co-host. We're going to talk all about Coinbase, Binance, the general crypto landscape, and what the Coinbase listing means moving forward to thecryptodrip.com/join and become a free member to gain access to our Discord channel. You can also subscribe for $10 a month to get weekly articles from Mr. Goose on the general crypto landscape. You can also get access to premium channels in the Discord, including trading signals from both myself and Mr. Goose. Without further ado, let's jump into the episode. Okay, well, welcome everybody to, this is episode one of the Crypto Drip. I'm joined here with Mr. Goose. Mr. Goose, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Are you tired, Mr. Goose?
I'm actually drinking my second coffee, so we're getting right back up there. But today's been a pretty eventful day with the Coinbase listing and how that's transpired. So I'm excited to get into it.
For sure. I think Coinbase listed probably, we're on the third hour, so about 2.5 hours ago. It's when it started trading. But Coinbase is a pretty big deal. It got listed on the NASDAQ exchange, and they kind of went a different route than traditional stocks. Usually they do an IPO. Coinbase did a DPO.
Right. Which is actually, you know, it's so funny. It's like I was watching Data Dash this morning as I was drinking my first cup of coffee, and, you know, even he's still calling it an IPO, and everyone on Twitter is still calling an IPO, but it's a nuanced difference. So an IPO is an initial public offering, which is pretty much the traditional route that's been a foundation for the stock market for a while. Direct listings are a little new, but it's like it'd be considered a DLP, which is direct listing placement, but they'll call it a DPO or a direct public offering. But the difference is that the DPO does not have an underwriter to establish the price of the share once it goes live. Now, the way that they establish it is the first 10 minutes of it going live on NASDAQ, there are initial investors who are allowed to place bids on the share price. And because the DPO does not prohibit shareholders in a lock period where they can't sell their shares, for instance, employees from Coinbase can now share their sell their shares immediately once they go public, right? So for the first 10 minutes, I forget what it's called. I think it's called like a display window or something. But for 10 minutes, there's an initial period where early investors can place bids and shareholders can place offers. And then NASDAQ, I assume, would have AI or something to coordinate what the prices should be once that window's up. And then there you go, the initial price for a DPO.
And that's where it starts.
Exactly.
Right, and it started at 381, right around 381.
381, dude, which is actually, it's so weird because I think one of the, there was an article out there that kind of made it mainstream. I forget who published it, but was that the initial price would have been $250 per share, which would have been like a $46 billion, you know, valuation. But in terms of valuations, there were evaluations that were saying $100 billion, and which is exactly where we showed up, which was like $99.1 billion or something. So, I mean, it's a little crazy. But, you know, what's funny is you go on FTX, which is a cryptocurrency exchange. They were trading futures contracts for a few months now. So I think it's December for the share, or it's a synthetic, you know, coin or a stock tokenization coin for Coinbase, and it was trading at like 570 or something. So
that doesn't surprise me one bit.
So it's pretty crazy how you know, valuations can go and how they're affected.
So. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's a little bit different with the stock market, but I remember, you know, the first day that ADA got listed on Coinbase, the Cardano token.
Yep.
And I was just shocked at how much different the prices were across exchanges. And it was just fascinating to watch like the different exchanges kind of balance each other out over the first couple hours.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, I don't think correct me if I'm wrong. I probably am wrong, but the stock exchange probably doesn't necessarily have that same issue. But there is a little bit of similarity there with the synthetic token trading at a wildly different range than the NASDAQ.
Right. Definitely. And I mean, the cool, linkage there is too, it's like those synthetic tokens or, you know, tokenized stocks actually provides liquidity for the real stock market, which is kind of cool. But I think that's going to be a big, that's going to be a big thing, you know, now that Binance has Tesla and, I think they also just listed Coinbase, which I think that's going to be huge. Like now you're transplanting, you know, availability, from the stock market into DeFi, you know, that's, we're kind of reversing the order there, and I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, that is huge. Even just for me, like I don't touch traditional stocks at all, but if I can get exposure to those stocks without leaving crypto,
exactly
that's so much easier for me as a buyer.
It's going to be super interesting how China reacts to Binance doing so, because I think there was a big, you know, I forget what exchange did it, but there was an exchange previously that dabbled in synthetic tokenization for the United States stock market, and they got hit hard
By China.
Oh yeah. So I don't know how Binance is gonna go with these Tesla and Coinbase shares. So we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out.
So that's kind of an interesting topic. Let's switch a little bit to the comparison of Coinbase and Binance, because I think it's pretty obvious those are the two major crypto exchanges out there. And for me personally, I'll just kind of actually let's go back and talk a little bit about our first exposure of Coinbase. So, I remember signing up for Coinbase when it was a startup, when it literally first started, and all they had was Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin.
Right.
That was their only three tokens. And I didn't even understand crypto at the time, but I thought it was kind of cool. And I remember creating an account, and I just thought it was super amazing that all of a sudden, because up before that point, my exposure to crypto was like, it's this weird thing and you have to download a node onto your computer and you have to mine it in order to get that coin. Right. And I just remember creating an account and kind of being kind of tickled a little bit of like, oh man, I could just buy this coin with my dollar. And all of a sudden that gateway made sense.
Right.
But of course I didn't buy anything because I had no money at the time. Right. But it was, I remember thinking it was just like the most friendly, the first friendly option to crypto.
Yeah, definitely. I remember my first purchase, the experience was a little frustrating. It was literally during the massive run up of like 2 or 3 weeks from when Bitcoin was like $9,000 to $20,000. And I think I bought in at like $14,000, and it took like, I don't even know how long. It took multiple days for my transaction to settle, because I just don't think node operators at that time were ready for the amount of network congestion that happened. And that was when, dude, Coinbase was down like, and obviously, you know, Coinbase still suffers from the maintenance and going down all the time, and that's kind of their MO. But back then, or in that last run up, dude, it was like every other day. I've got like 4 or 5 emails daily about how they had maintenance fees, but you know, they made it. And I do think initially from the very beginning, the founder's exit strategy was to go public. But it's a rags to riches story. So, you got to give credit where credit's due. Those guys started, I forget what the story was, but they started similar to like, you know, Microsoft and Apple, and like right out of a garage. So you know, congrats to him, and we'll see how Binance does.
I think it's really interesting because I think there's it's almost like this war between Coinbase and the Binance group of people, because I've never used Binance. I think I tried using Binance at one point and then literally for months could not log into my account. It would just tell me that there was some error and it wouldn't give me any information.
Yeah.
And it was super frustrating, but then I found out it's actually, you can't even use Binance in Idaho where I live because I don't know, we live in the Stone Age or something, but it was, my exposure to Binance has been next to none. And I have bought all of my crypto and until recently through Coinbase. And I never had like any negative feelings about Coinbase. I mean, I think there was some frustrations with their scaling issues, like you said, but I mean, even then it was pretty limited. And I just always felt like it was such a great user experience to buy crypto from there.
Right. I mean, I primarily use Binance US. In fact, it's sort of my stem and where I deposit my money directly. And then I stem out to other exchanges when I want to purchase and trade other smaller coins. But Binance US has been honestly nothing but great so far. I think I used Coinbase once for an off. I think I used Coinbase once a long time ago during this bull run for something else. But for the most part, Binance US, and I don't really have any problems. Go ahead.
Just kind of a question, like what made you lean, because both of those options were probably there. So what made you choose Binance over Coinbase?
At the time, it had listed Cardano, and that was in our introduction, that was my first dip in my toe in the water. And then my second was VeChain, actually, which Binance US also listed. And to be honest, where VeChain price is at, I've actually made more money with my entry into VeChain than I have Cardano, but I like Cardano way better.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. VeChain really exploded, but it was interesting. I looked into VeChain a while ago. I remember watching their trailer video on their own page, and I was like, man, that's kind of cheesy. It's so cheesy. So
cheesy, dude, but you know. You got to do what you got to do. One thing I do want to get into is how Bitcoin reacted and the sentiment for crypto investors right now.
So just to give our listeners kind of a some context for this episode. So Coinbase listed on NASDAQ. It listed or started trading at about 381. It pumped up to about 423 or 429, which was, you know, encouraging, but has since then kind of plummeted to, it's sitting right now at about 318, 316. And Bitcoin reacted a little bit, but I don't know. It seems like it's been fairly muted. I mean, it's only down, let's see, from the time that Coinbase listed, it's only down about 2%.
Yeah. So what was the exact time that they listed? Do you know?
Let me check. I don't know the exact time that they listed. I just know it was at 10:30. Yeah. Well, yeah. For the East Coast, right. I think it was at 12:30.
Down a few percent. Enough to liquidate people. That's for.
I saw a ton of longs on Bitcoin got liquidated.
Yeah. Like I mean, I also posted in one of our signals that it would be a good time, if all things go well today, to open up a long or a leverage long on ADA if you do play around with leverage. And I still think that's a good play. But as I said, after it did not all go well. I, for one, am actually very upset and annoyed at the crypto sentiment right now about how Bitcoin reacted. I can't even tell if they're joking or not, but so many of the crypto influencers are screaming top and screaming, you know, bear market, you know, initiated. And I'm like, and it seems like they're being real, like that's what they actually think. And it blows me away that, you know, the mantra for crypto is buy the hype, sell the news. And
yeah, I hate even that.
Yeah. And I mean, it happens every single time without yep. fail. And on the biggest, on the one time retail investors in crypto can dump on retail investors in traditional finance. Did you really think that that wasn't not going to happen? Are you kidding me? Yeah. They're going to do it. So, you know, I don't understand.
Yeah,
what
no,
this
that's,
whole top thing
that's
is.
A really,
like, yeah.
I mean, that's a really good point because I think I had this thought right after I listed and it kind of started going downward that, I mean, if you think crypto really is like, I don't really want to call it a weapon, but like the tool against traditional finance for like most people, it's like the ability to kind of fight back or get access to a lot of tools that have, you know, for a long time just been, no, sorry, you're not wealthy enough. You don't get to play that game.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to imagine that when crypto is exploding in the space and even Coinbase, the flagship of crypto in general, actually entering into the traditional finance space as a serious player, that there's going to be some really pissed off people.
Yeah.
Who feel super threatened by that. And I think there's a ton of market manipulation happening right now that most people aren't aware of.
Oh, 100%. I mean, people scream and shout for the introduction of institutional money into Bitcoin, like it's the saving grace. But in terms of short-term volatility, institutional players will steal lunch money from you like a baby. You know, like especially if you're an initiated trader. Like now that the institutional players are here, they're going to instill the exact same tactics that they do in the traditional stock market with zero regulatory oversight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I mean, on one hand, it's a good thing that institutional money is here. On the other hand, they're going to manipulate the hell out of this market. And, you know, it's up to you to figure out a strategy to profit from it. So,
yeah. And they're going to blame the retail traders for, you know, any sort of crash that might happen because, I mean, they're already blaming retail traders before. I mean, there's so many videos out there of these like really big, important hedge fund managers who just are just trashing on people who found a Bitcoin. Like they had no like intellectual backing for that choice.
Right.
So they're already angry, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. It's kind of like, it's really interesting. I think the problem with Bitcoin is that there's no utility with the token. And so there's no economic drive outside of the store value narrative to keep it going against, you know, the tide of, you know, legacy finance or whatever that might be trying to put pressure on it.
And
you know, a crypto like Cardano or even Ergo, or I mean, let's even take Ethereum. Like, at least it has some functional use outside of it's just an asset.
Exactly. This is where Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I was just looking at the chart. I mean, Ethereum is up 2% today, and Bitcoin's down 2%. So it's anyway. Go ahead.
Well, this is where the narrative is going to start coming more into play and becoming a topic of conversation, you know, mainstream. And it's that when Ethereum or Binance or Cardano starts eating away at Bitcoin's market cap, not in terms of siphoning it away, more in terms of surpassing it, then it becomes the separation of cryptocurrency from Bitcoin. And whether people think that's a valid story or not, it's going to happen one day. Just like gold is separated from equities in traditional investing. You know, the curtain's going to be unveiled that Bitcoin is a less useful and will honestly be underutilized because there's going to be other cryptocurrency projects out there that are just fundamentally better. like for instance, yeah. Ethereum, like for instance, Cardano. And we're going to see yeah. that shift within the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. It's the same argument. Like, you know, I didn't get into an argument, but it was a point I made that you could look at, gold and, any sort of, industry market cap, like for instance, climate change, and carbon renewal. Like over time, the market cap for that, market is going to surpass gold's market cap, just like, you know, the market cap for Ethereum or Cardano is going to surpass Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. You know, like they have their purposes, but at some point the separation between Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is going to happen. So this conversation, I'm glad it's starting now. Like it's starting to be, you know, there's whispers and echoes, and it's going to start being a mainstream conversation. So I'm excited for that to happen.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I think it's even interesting the narrative that Bitcoin is like the crypto gold is right. It's not like entirely accurate. You know, this whole idea of it being a store of value, it's not actually like synonymous with gold, because if you look at gold, it has tons of utility outside of being a store of value. Like we use it in computers, in jewelry, in, you know, all sorts of stuff that actually right. like there's an actual industrial utility for gold outside right. of its just store of value narrative.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin doesn't have any of that.
I think I disagree on a little bit for that. Like, I mean, yes, there's a some sort of utility for gold. A jewelry is more of a store of value than it would be a utility or even some sort of that's social fair. Currency. In terms of computer hardware, like there's other more conductive metals out there than gold. I don't necessarily agree that there's a ton of utility. I think honestly, like, yes, I agree here that gold and Bitcoin are not as useful. I'm sorry, just Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not as useful as other cryptocurrencies, but it is possible to send Bitcoin, which is a value, which has a value attached to it globally within a trusted manner. You know, it's peer-to-peer, like that's its utility. Whether it's going to be adopted in mainstream, I don't know. It depends on, you know, how things like Stacks or Thor chain or the Lightning Network, these layer two implementations do and how well it's received. But because that will increase its utility and therefore, you know, kind of mitigate these risks that are posed to it by Ethereum and Cardano and Binance and other chains that might, you know, overtake its market cap and maybe even its, you know, hold on the cryptocurrency narrative. So we'll see. Yeah.
So let's go back to Coinbase. What do you think the next 6 months hold for the actual listing?
Coinbase is, and I said this in our market outlook, or at least I hinted to it, Coinbase is going to provide a psychological bridge between traditional finance and cryptocurrency or decentralized finance. And that's going to play both a positive and a negative role. Negative is there's going to be more of a correlation between cryptocurrency volatility and traditional market volatility through that bridge of Coinbase. So being that cryptocurrency is still nascent, at $2 trillion market cap, it's still undervalued. The volatility is going to play against Coinbase's favor. And even they even recognized that and came out with a statement that, you know, we did really well this past quarter, we did more volume than our entire 2020 year, but that's not going to last. You know, like they're still, I would say, subservient to the 4-year Bitcoin cycle. you know, so their yeah. their performance is going to follow that cycle until that cycle ends, whether it be this cycle that we completely demolish this four-year trend that we've got going on, or it's the next four-year trend. I think that's when volatility for Coinbase will slow down, but I think they're highly tied to how the cryptocurrency market performs. Sure. So we'll see. I think 2022 is not going to be a great year for Coinbase. Let's just keep that at that.
What about for like crypto as well? You think probably tied?
It depends. You know, this is why I'm upset with the sentiment. Like, you're talking about, it doesn't matter what, if you're a monetary theorist or if you subscribe to Keynesian monetary theory, like we have debased the global reserve currency more than it's historical, more than anything we've ever seen. In fact, even our current fiscal policy environment is also like nothing we've seen before. Okay, yes, we printed a ton of money in 2008, but at the time spending was or at least the transfer from M2 to M1 was utilized more often. Right now we're seeing a ton of the people who received most of the stimulus, whether it be corporations, institutions, family funds, whatever, saving or putting it into mm-hmm. assets. So we're not seeing that transfer from M2 to M1 like we did in 2008. So now we've got jobs exploding, even though we thought the job reports were going to come back awful. We've got, you know, equities exploding. We've got super funny, gold's down 12%, you know, year to date. But we've got cryptocurrency exploding. All while inflation hasn't really set in. So
right.
We are literally in unprecedented times where we have printed more money than we've almost ever printed ever. So the sentiment is not dead. This is the strongest the Bitcoin narrative has ever been. I do not think this is the top. I think we go up from here, and I do not know if the four-year bull cycle lasts after this. I think this year could be the year that we see the end of the four-year cycle and we continue to be less volatile from here. That's what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of lean in that direction too. I mean, the DXY pretty much has just had this steady decline. It kind of had like a brief bounce back. I don't know if it was a month ago or a few weeks ago, but they kind of bounced back. But I find this interesting correlation, like, the dollar value goes down every time there's a pump in crypto. And
right.
if the dollar rallies, crypto just like,
right. just,
you know, bleeds all over. And
right.
it's definitely like an obvious correlation to the inflation that's happened in the last year. So it's really weird. And like, you know, you make a super good point of like, we haven't really felt the effects of inflation. And I right. shared an article on Twitter a couple of days ago from CNN where March, I think, had the highest uptick in consumer prices.
Yeah.
And so there is like we're actually starting to feel the effects of inflation.
Right. And it's going to
be a little scary.
Yeah. It's going to go up from here. I mean, it's the incentive, like, you know, if this even this next bill that might pass from Biden, this infrastructure bill, the incentive is to, you know, make it all back within the next 15 years by levying taxes. And that's going to happen. That's going to be easier to do once consumer prices go up. Right. Because if consumer prices go up, taxes go up. So it's going to be easier to pay off things like this, which is sort of the incentive. But what you're not seeing, and is what I think they're hoping for, is incentives for people to get out of savings and to start spending money, you know, because mm-hmm. Once money's printed, it's the whole velocity of money concept. Once money's printed, it's one-to-one. As it starts to move, it becomes more valuable. I think the average is like 4 to 5 fold. But that's when you're going to start seeing an uptick in consumer prices. That's when you're going to see taxes start to increase. And when that happens, I don't know, which is why I'm saying we're in unprecedented times where people are sitting on a stockpile of cash and it needs to start moving around for any of these, you know, any of the policies or any of the bills and relief that we've come out with to start working the way that it was meant to work. So,
yeah,
we'll start to see it all play out. I really, I do think we're going to start to see that over the summer and towards the end of the year, which is why, which honestly, it plays almost perfectly into my theory that this is almost exactly like the 2013 run. We're going to see a massive run. We're going to see a little mini blow off top here within the next month or two. We're going to settle down big time over the summer. And then as consumer prices start to rise and we start to get glimpses of this inflation, the Bitcoin narrative comes right back and we rally like crazy towards the end of the year, just like we did in 2013. So it seems to be playing out almost perfectly. So we'll see how
it goes. That's the goose prediction, everyone. It's interesting because a lot of altcoin influencers like I follow on Twitter, most of them are like, oh, we're gearing up for altcoin summer, you know, and it's a little bit different. I think this is probably the, at least for me, this is the biggest, I feel like there's a pretty big fracture in the crypto space of like wildly different opinions about the future. But they're not like, you know, it's not like everybody thinks we're just going to keep going. And only a few people think we're at the top. Like it's pretty right down the middle as far as, at least for the people I follow, but.
Yeah. I mean, well, the reality is nobody knows. I think the best thing that you can do is when it's something as disruptive as this, whether it be Bitcoin, whether it be cryptocurrency, as a whole, or even decentralized finance, it is imperative to take a step back or even a few steps back and to look at things in a macro picture. You know, it's easy to call tops when you're staring at a 15-minute chart. But when you take steps back and you start to realize the mission that Bitcoin is on and how much traction that it's already produced, like it's gotten to the point where, you know, too big to fail, regardless of, you know, if we see an 80% pullback by the end of this bull run, it's gotten too big to fail. And where this ends up is anybody's guess. And I'm just excited to be along for the ride. This is like, it's not even like the internet, you know, like this is much bigger, you know, this will be the catalyst for the equivalent of the separation of state and church. This will be the catalyst for the separation of state and money. And we're along for the ride. And I'm excited to be here. So I just don't think that we are anywhere near the top for this cycle or Bitcoin in general. So that's my take.
Time will tell. I kind of lean on the same, you know, I don't like have a lot to add on that other than like, it really, the whole concept of inflation, I think is hard for the average person to wrap their head around. Because, you know, we're like, oh, it's just more expensive, but it really hits home for me when you realize, everything's more expensive, but your salary literally stayed the same. Yeah. Your salary didn't change at all. And like, that's where it's like, oh shoot, I'm literally getting paid less than I did last year.
And it's the same for your savings account, you know?
Same for your savings. Yeah, exactly.
So like, oh God. We'll see. That's going to be another narrative. And that's the thing. Cryptocurrency is run on narratives. And that's going to be another narrative is the hashtag pay me in Bitcoin narrative. You know, we've already seen it with, you know, large sports personalities with Russell Okung and the Ravens. We're seeing it with the NBA? Some NBA team is now allowing their players to accept Bitcoin salary. There's going to be Mavericks? Other.
I don't know.
Was it the Mavericks? No, I think the Mavericks was Cuban using Dogecoin.
Maybe.
Payments. Right. Yeah. I like Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban's cool.
I like that he just doesn't care.
Yeah, but he's definitely one of the guys that we got to see his capitulation in full force from.
Yep.
Cryptocurrency being, you know, dog poop to where he is now. And the guy's taken, you know, massive steps into learning the entire cryptocurrency market. I just watched a podcast where he was on, and you know, this guy, he took some time to understand. I mean, he's still relatively new to the space, but he's starting to understand the implications of DeFi and how it'll literally, you know, displace almost every major financial institution in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to deny that. It's so disruptive. I mean,
oh yeah. And yeah. I mean, this goes back to our introduction episode where I talked about the state of DeFi and how I think, you know, right now we're just seeing a lot of the same, you know, a lot of the same things that we see in traditional finance, like the IPOs and the pre-sales. I mean, you know, Coinbase obviously had pre-sales as a part of their DPO, which, you know, a lot of people, I guess, could call shady, but you know, that's just how markets work. And I mean as long as it's done in a fair fashion, I don't think it's necessarily shady. I mean, that's how DPOs work, and they're relatively new, so
yeah it'll be interesting. I think the Coinbase it's probably as close to, I don't know if, okay, I'm about like maybe 60%, maybe 70% sure on this statement, so don't quote me. But it's almost like
I'm already opening up Twitter. Let's do this. Yep. All right.
But it's almost like, at least for now, until more crypto-centric exchanges get listed publicly, it's almost like if you want to invest in the crypto industry or the crypto space as a whole, it's almost like an ETF or something, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, if the whole crypto market does well, you can almost bet Coinbase is going to do well.
Yeah
versus the opposite, which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that's where the dichotomy is going to be crazy, is when, you know, is when traditional finance markets do bad and Coinbase mm-hmm. does bad with it. Does crypto end up doing bad and vice versa? You know, yeah, and so it's going to be interesting to tell. One thing that I think, and it even goes exactly to what we're talking about, that I think was super cool, was the founders of Coinbase requested that the block in which they go public be encoded with metadata. And the metadata was like, was the headline that Biden, or the House passed Biden's $1.9 trillion relief bill. I was like, that's no hilarious. Way. Yeah.
That's actually so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It goes exactly to what we're saying. Like the amount of debasement we're doing to our currency, to the global currency, like is ridiculous. Yeah. So, and I don't even think we're anywhere near, the top for traditional markets either. I think they're going to keep pumping for,
well,
I don't know, for a while.
Wasn't there, I remember seeing something on Twitter, but basically that whole chart of, you know, if you take the stock market performance and you adjust it with inflation in mind, most of these companies are insolvent.
Yeah, that was super interesting. Super interesting.
Which, you know, it's like, is crypto even doing good, or is the dollar just literally dumping itself all over the floor?
But that's the point. Like, real assets are supposed to be the ones that do well in inflationary environments, not necessarily equities, you know? So cryptocurrency should be doing well, or Bitcoin, more specifically, should be doing well in this environment. But guess what? Look at the world's oldest hard asset besides real estate. Gold's down, mm-hmm. like I said, 12% year to date. So that, like, this is, it's just so weird. Like, as you're seeing these companies being, I don't even want to say overvalued. I don't even know what to call it, because they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, inflated, I guess, as these companies are inflated, as cryptocurrencies inflated, like, how are we still seeing gold down 12%? You know?
Yeah.
And real estate's booming right now as well. So, and you know, it just depends on if Fed does and how they institute their monetary and fiscal policy. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think they still said that they're not going to drop interest rates, or they're going to continue to keep interest rates low till like 2023, which is just absolutely insane.
Oh gosh, dude. When I look at my traditional savings and the complete lack of interest I receive on it, it's depressing.
Yeah. And then you go to USDT and make, you know, 5 to 8%.
Oh, I know.
And
you're like, yeah.
What?
And I'm like, I think somebody actually in our Discord, The Life and Times, which, hello, I see you in our chat. And in case anybody, I'm just going to, you know, shameless plug here. You can chat during these episodes live in our Discord. If you go to thecryptodrip.com/join. Yep. All right, I'm going to leave it at that.
And then go to episode chat if you want to ask questions, and, you know, we'll definitely talk about
it. Yeah. But yeah, like some people, depending on your risk tolerance, some people just throw their money straight into, you know, USDC or UST and earn crazy good interest on it while the rest of us, you know, literally lose value. Right. But it's, I think for me, it's always been like it's not insured. And so part of me is like, I just have this hard time, you know, like,
yeah.
I think there's this trust factor, which, you know, just given time, I think it's going to, that trust factor will get easier and easier over time. But
yeah, so The Life and Times actually makes a good point, and he kind of echoes what I was saying about gold not being all that useful until you actually hold it physically, i.e. jewelry. But he does make a good point that gold being down seems to say that society is confident in society, but they're bearish on nation state solvency, which is super fair, and actually makes a lot of sense. Which again goes to our point that maybe Bitcoin is seeing the same inflation that, you know, United States equities are seeing, and we're not pricing in the fact that it is a real asset. Because if Bitcoin is gold 2.0, then it should be run by the same narratives that gold does, except it's more hard, you know. So we should be seeing Bitcoin down 12%, but we're not. So maybe we are still just in the inflated bull cycle. You know, who knows? That's why I'm saying nobody can literally put a finger on what we're going to do and where we're going. But that is a really good point.
Yep. And I think that's actually like a good way to sum up the entire space right now, is because it's so disruptive. There's so many unknowns. There's so many like macro picture things that are going on right now.
It's so disruptive.
It's really, yeah. I mean, it could go a million different ways.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I think there's so many different opinions out
there.
Yeah.
Which is why let's ground ourselves back into at least how I got into space. And I believe where you ended up is, let's look at the projects in this space that are going to survive and that are going to be standards. And we're talking about the people that develop in such a way that they are taking into account the mistakes of past projects, but they're also stress testing their development in a way that in the future, their product or the project in general will continue to thrive. And I'm talking about things like Cardano, things like Ergo, who take pride in to how they do their development in terms of implementation, right? They're going to go and research the project, and are they going to go and do research on things they want to implement? Then they're going to take it to a board that's a third party and get it peer reviewed. Then they're going to implement. That way you have formal verification for everything that you're doing. Like that's the correct way to go about how we disrupt traditional finance. That's how you do it. And let's serve, you know, so today I finished up the Ergo article. And let's use that as a microcosm for development. Like, Ergo has to develop DeFi, right? Has to develop applications for decentralized finance, which only just really became mainstream 12 months ago, right?
Yeah.
But within those 12 months, we have seen hundreds of faulty implementation, or just ideas that flat out didn't work. So not only are we not only are we creating disruptive technology, but we're creating disruptive technology for that disruptive technology as we go along. So this process is super hard to try and pinpoint where we're going to end up. But I really do think that you have to go with the people like Cardano, like Ergo, like SingularityNet, who also has, you know, a founder, Ben Goertzel, who takes extreme pride in the formal verification process. And I think that is going to be what survives, you know? So that's kind of how I view where we're going and how we'll be able to be successful in disrupting finance. But
yeah,
that's how I see it.
Yeah, I agree. So right about here, we wrapped up our episode recorded live in the Discord channel at thecryptodrip.com. Make sure you subscribe, and you can follow me at Twitter at CryptosCalvin, and you can follow Mr. Goose on Twitter at GooseOfCrypto. I want to thank you for listening in. Until next time, keep on brewing.